Welcome back to ZA Confidential, and today we are having a fairly rare treat. It's a treat for me anyway, because as regular listeners, both of you will know, Michael Olifir, award-winning food writer, restaurateur, all sorts of good things, would normally talk to us from the Cape and give us his views on whichever wine we were tasting. Today we are deeply fortunate because we have Michael Olifir with us in Joburg. He's now moved up here and looking happy, trying not to miss the mountain and the sea too much. Michael Olifir, great to have you with us.
Oh, John, thank you. It's very special.
Okay, so we have me, John Fraser, we have our wine guru. We also have three VIP tasters, Malcolm McDonald, who's also helping us with some of the technology. He's with the clientele. We have Chris Hart. I was about to say well-known economist, probably notorious economist is a better phrase for our Chris. And another favourite regular nice chap, Jeff Osborne from Gumtree Auto, who knows probably more about selling used cars than many people and is probably more honest than most people who sell used cars. So, enough rubbish from me. It is time for the tasting. Michael Olifir, what are we tasting today?
John, we're tasting a wine from Jordan Estate, Gary and Kathy Jordan in Stellenbosch. It's their Riesling. It's called The Real McCoy, 2018 vintage. The Real McCoy, because there has been a wine known as Riesling in the Cape, but it's actually made from a minor French variety called Crouchon Blanc. This is the authentic German Riesling. Janice Robinson, British wine writer, says that this is the greatest white wine grape in the world. She even puts it above Chardonnay. A wine like this appeals to me hugely. I find the nose is slightly reticent. It has that classical, what they call terpene undertow, which is a kind of turpentine petrol, but in a very, very nice way. And then, of course, the fruit. It doesn't, on the nose, lead you to anything once it hits the palate, because it's just a mass of fruit. It's got the most beautiful, soft acidity, mouth-filling stuff, lovely long aftertaste, and really a great food wine. I mean, I've had Rieslings like this with gentle vegetable curries, lovely with fish, and of course, as a glass at sundown, it's perfect.
Well, as you know, Michael, I spent many years covering the European Union then. Wonderful place where they're so good at making decisions. And I used to go once a month, sometimes more often than that, to Strasbourg in the heart of Alsace, where they make some of the best Rieslings in the world.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying this isn't, but I used to drink it by the pint.
Yeah.
And it's a great grape. It's not really a criticism. It's probably more praise than criticism. I find it quite heavy, quite complex. It's not something you'd want to slurp down on a summer's day.
Yeah.
But as a food wine, it is lovely. And as you say, as a fish wine, it's a brilliant choice. And of course, Asian food can quite often complement Riesling very well, Thai, Chinese, and so on. But as usual, what do I know? Chris Hart.
Yes. No, I certainly think it's got that organic flavour, but I agree. It's got a very nice long aftertaste. It is a nice wine to sip. It's not something to drink fast, but it is something to really savour and enjoy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm particularly delighted to be drinking a Riesling again after so many years, because for a long time it happened to be one of my favourites, going back to the old Niederberg Pole Riesling, and I seem to recall there was a Select as well. But this is very, very superior, no question about it. I agree with the complexity of it. Loads of fruit, highly palatable and very soft acidity in my view. And I would also advocate that it would be suitable for a sole or a baby kinglet.
Yes.
Something along those lines.
I think that one of the things that appeals to me hugely is that softness to the acidity. Sort of like eating a really nice ripe green gage plum or something.
Yeah.
Well, what do you make of this green gage plum, Mr. McDonald?
I don't know about green gage plum, but it's certainly absolutely appeals to me. I'm really a red wine drinker rather than white, but I'll buy some of this because really this is just a lovely, interesting flavour. Not at all a boring white wine.
Yeah.
Michael, Jordan is a producer there in Stellenbosch, am I
yes,
right?
Yes, they are.
I've never actually visited the farm or the restaurant, which I've heard is quite good. What can you tell us about Jordan?
Well, it's up at the top of the Stellenbosch Cliff. The Jordans were shoemakers, and
hence the aroma. Yeah,
Ted and Sheila Jordan, the parents of Gary, bought the farm. And Gary's a geologist. Kathy's a winemaker. They'd worked in California doing winemaking there, and they've come home and really created an absolute gem there. They've been pioneers in quite a number of ways. They're now looking at planting Assyrtiko, which is the one of the Greek varieties. Kathy's is of Greek origin, so I think it's almost natural that they do that. But they're very excited about the plantings and about the possibilities. They just make lovely wines. Their Chardonnays are stunning. I think also because of Gary's geology knowledge, they've been clever in that they've planted the grapes in the right places, on the right slopes, the right aspects, etc. George Jardine, who runs the restaurant and the bakery on the estate, does great work. And really to go and sit out there on the patio overlooking the dam and the mountains in the distance is very, very special, and his food is excellent.
Well, I must go. I keep saying every time I go to that part of the world, I must go. But as you know, Michael, you're spot for choice in the
Wildlands.
And I have to be careful that I don't drink more than 4 pints in an afternoon because my driving does tend to suffer. Jeff Osborne, just hearing Michael say that Jordan is planting some Greek grape variety, the name of which I've already forgotten. It's planting and making Riesling, the traditional Riesling, as opposed to the Cape Riesling. Do you think that maybe we in South Africa are just becoming a bit too faddish, a bit too experimental, and that maybe we should stick to what we do really well, which is Chenin Blanc and Cabernet? And Pinotage.
Yeah, I favour variety and choice, and if it's been done as professionally and as successfully as this has, then I think it's a welcome move in the right direction, but of course they are so mentioning Greece as an origin for cultivars of wine. My son lives in Cyprus and they make delightful wine there as well, predominantly Greek in the south of Cyprus. I would welcome. I think it's great to taste something different.
Malcolm, variety, spice of life.
I think the challenge would be if one estate tries to do all sorts of things, then they're probably not going to get them all really excellent.
Well, arguably Fairview does. They do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
As all sorts of different wines.
Hmm.
I suppose that's true, but are all of them excellent in their specific varietals?
No, they're not all excellent, but they're interesting.
Yeah, I suppose.
I haven't tasted the full range of Fairview because they charge you for that. But I have helped myself to the cheese platters when no one was looking.
I'd have to say that that's exceptional. Then I don't think it's easy to be excellent at everything, and so I think the Cape could be excellent at everything. But if each estate sort of is excellent at one or two things, I think that would be enough.
Well, to wake up Chris Hart, what we were actually talking about is comparative advantage.
Well, the thing is, if you talk about the fourth industrial revolution now, the better description of the fourth industrial revolution is not so much disruption, but mass customization. In other words, can you do what people actually want in the variety that you want? And so, whereas I agree that in certain instances you can compromise quality by trying to do everything in there. But I think certainly the Cape is well positioned. Not just the Cape, you've got the Orange River, you've got other places in South Africa that can actually, from a point of view of the whole market point of view, deliver something that's got really a full spectrum of choice.
Michael Olifair, you're now up in Gauteng, and one of your roles is to be an ambassador for Cape Wine. You consult with a few estates and you help them. What's your current view of whether or not, and I know this is something that our friend Jeremy Sampson is fairly passionate about, whether or not the Gauteng, which buys, I think, most of the wine in South Africa, is actually as well served as possibly it should be by the wine producers. I know there's WineX, there are lots of wine fairs and different things, but do you get the impression that the evangelicals are out there doing their job as well as they should be?
I don't think that they're out there as much as they should be. Obviously watch the social media, watch what wineries are doing, and sure, they come up, the winemakers come up and they do sort of winemakers dinners, 750 rand per person kind of thing, and you're not possibly not getting to your wine drinkers. There was a thing on Facebook where, in fact, I asked who the person was who was running the Linden Wine Club, and suddenly 20, 30, 40 people said, "Oh, wine club. Oh, yes, count me in." But in fact, it was, we'd love to come. It's going to be a lovely free boozery going on. I think that there is a big gap for education. I love it when bottle stores have tastings on Saturday mornings. People can go in and taste, and I believe that's coming to an end up here, which I think is very sad. But I think if you want to learn about wine, the only way to do it is to get out there and get tasting.
Just a quick question, if I may, picking up on that. To what extent is the good stuff going overseas? We know that the local market, this is the biggest consumption area here. And, in the old days, of course, we had the benefit of knowing that it was staying at home to a large extent. But now, huge export, and of course it's pushed the prices up. But from an availability perspective, Michael?
Jeff, I think the wines from the top estates are generally available. One of the things that I think a lot of people don't know about is the massive amounts of wine that we send out in bulk. They call them the whales. They're massive plastic bags in massive containers, which are bottled in Spain or France or
red and white.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And not far from Southampton, there's a very big. And these are technically superb bottling plants, clean, doing great stuff. But then you'll find that there'll be a wine called something which you'll never find on a shelf in Cape Town or Johannesburg.
Okay.
And it's usually down at the bottom end of the market, supermarket shelf, and the bottom end of the
price. How do they market them? Bottled where?
Bottled in
wherever.
Supermarkets. They'll take a wine, a range of wines with a Cape Springbok label on or something.
Right.
But we are able to get the top wines here, absolutely. And there are a couple of fine wine stores in Johannesburg where you can do that. People who have knowledge of what they're talking about.
Malcolm?
I suppose I haven't really looked for South African wines overseas. When I'm overseas, I'm usually in restaurants and in not really in supermarkets. But I certainly, when I have tasted wines overseas, and in general it would be in upper-end establishments, I haven't found it to be superior to South Africa in any sort of way that I noticed. I think that when I'm here, I tend not to buy foreign wines, I tend to buy South African wines, and I've always enjoyed them, and no more so when I'm overseas. So I don't think there's any dearth of excellent wines available in South Africa from South African producers.
Yeah.
Chris, does it encourage or annoy you that we're sending so much stuff out in bulk this way? I know there are great concerns in the wine industry itself that this is damaging the brand, that if you go into many a European supermarket, for instance, you will find a pretty cheap, not nasty, but not impressive wine. And that could be your impression of South Africa, something that's been shipped away in a condom and then stuck in a bottle.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I can't help thinking that, you know, to command a premium price, you actually have to have a premium marketing backing to that. And South Africa certainly has no capacity to swamp the global market at all. And certainly a lot of places, you know, a lot of opportunity to place wine in different markets, not necessarily Europe. I do think, you know, countries just north of us, where you've got growing middle classes, etc., is a huge potential for, you know, just for South African wines, the Far East, etc. They're all markets that I think can actually be used to absorb the wine we produce. So I think we must actually cherish the quality and try and boost it, because otherwise we won't ever achieve the actual prices that we need to achieve.
Both you and Michael have been to Botswana quite a lot recently. Michael's been doing some consulting there. You've been doing a bit of your economic stuff.
Yes.
Are we doing a good job in Botswana, do you think, Chris?
No. And I'll tell you why. Is that I think because Botswana is seen as such a small market, it gets taken for granted. It's a very familiar market to South Africa, because you go there and all the South African stores are there, the brands are there, etc. So it's really just South Africa mirrored, across an artificial line, you know, in the sand, as it were. But
which only takes you 8 hours to traverse.
Yeah, but the critical thing is that, you know, what's priced in rand here is priced in pula there. Mm-hmm. Even though you've got the pula stronger than the rand, and the VAT is lower in Botswana, and that is a strange thing. And I think it's really, you know, people taking that market for granted.
Okay, Michael, off here. We've heard from Chris that maybe we're not doing the best job possible in Botswana. You were actually consulting people in the catering industry, the hospitality industry. What's your impression?
John, I think if we're talking wine, I was talking to a wine distributor up in Maun, and I was trying to ascertain what wines he had in his list, which wines we could put onto the list for the restaurant I was consulting for. And then we got into pricing. And he said, well, we're in a problem because we're in the middle now of a situation where the previous president imposed a 55% tax on wine. And the current president has brought it down to 35%. So now we're sitting with stock at 55% tax and stock at 35% tax. So you know, you put a wine on a list and then suddenly next time you order, you'll find it's actually cheaper because you're paying less tax on it.
One way to get votes, of course.
Yes, of course. But you know, it's the tourism industry. Right. They put a tax on all gas drinks. So, you know, the Coca-Cola and these people had to open factories in Botswana, which is great, but there was no factory in Botswana that could make sparkling mineral water. Still water, yes, but not sparkling mineral. So sparkling mineral water is coming in over the border at 35%
wow.
tax, which is crazy. Mm.
Well, gas always was expensive.
Yes, it was.
Malcolm, I don't know how much you travel in Africa. I travel lamentably little in Africa. I think my last trip was to Mozambique, to the middle of nowhere, and the middle of nowhere is now in deep trouble, as you know, in Mozambique. But if you were visiting one of our neighbouring countries, what would be your expectation if you walked into a fairly good restaurant, sat down for a meal, and was shown the wine list?
My experience has been that almost no matter how rural, but I haven't travelled in Africa, sort of the islands, those sorts of places, a top restaurant, you can still get the top end things no matter where you are. And you can still get excellent wines with your meals in top restaurants on very remote places. So I would expect the other African countries to be no worse off than very remote islands. I mean, you can't get more expensive or more difficult to get things to than those remote islands. So I'm sure Africa should be able to do the same or better.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time again. So it just remains for me to ask Michael Olivier to remind us what we've been drinking.
We've been drinking the Jordan The Real McCoy Riesling 2018.
And I think it was thumbs up all right.
Yeah,
definitely.
So thank you very much, Michael Olivier. Thank you, Malcolm McDonald, Chris Hart, Jeff Osborne, and of course me, John Fraser. That was ZA Confidential.